What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopers family. The playoffs are well and truly underway. We're into the second round now, but as the degenerates that we are, we have one eye firmly fixed still on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Today, we're going to kind of ramp up our off-season talk a little bit. I haven't spoke about anything off-season related yet on the podcast, so we'll get into that a little bit. We'll kind of go whether we keep the pick or whether the pick goes to Golden State and kind of go down those two paths and see what the Minnesota Timberwolves can do heading into the off-season. Joining me to do all that, of course, is Canis Hoopers contributor, friend of the show, Jack Borman. What's going on, man?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Yeah, very well, actually. I guess it's nice to have no Timberwolves and not be so stressed about watching basketball. But I also miss watching them as well. It's kind of a sick little habit. So
I miss the daily Anthony Edwards content.
Yeah, we're not getting as many funny post game interviews at the moment, which is a bit sad.
They're coming though. They're coming. Summer league is only what, six, seven weeks away.
Yeah, and it's for how long the off season feels, especially at the moment when the regular season's kind of just wrapped up. It really does come around quickly. The draft lottery's in what, 16, 17 days, so it's coming quick, and there'll be a lot to talk about, I think, to do with the Timberwolves this off season, especially if they keep that pick. So let's start with the path forward for the team if they do keep the pick. I'll just start with the draft, I guess. Like, who do you think impacts the team most out of, you know, Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jalen Suggs? They seem to be the four guys that, you know, are a chance to be one of those top three picks. Is there anyone who stands out there, especially for you, in terms of the future moving forward?
Yeah, I think Cade, especially with just his size and kind of where the NBA is heading in terms of being able to have really big and physical playmakers, is something that really sets you apart. I mean, you look at what's going on with the Mavs and Luka, having your point guard being able to be, you know, 6'8", just built like a brick wall like Luka is, really just makes a huge difference for your team. And the same thing kind of goes for the 76ers too, with having Ben Simmons being able to, you know, really get downhill and use his size to make passes that most other point guards can't make. And so that obviously is there with Cade to go along with his shot making ability and a guy that's, you know, not, you know, a negative on defense. He's a guy who uses his size really, really well on defense at the point of attack. And Cade obviously, you know, is the number one guy, and unlike last year, you know, there's not really a debate there. But outside of Cade, like who would you kind of slot in right behind him as if like the Timberwolves had the number two pick? Who do you think would make the most sense?
I do think it's still Mobley. I think there's no case really for me kind of if we're going like fit or best player available if you have the chance to take Cade, even though Mobley kind of seems like the guy who could slot into that four or five role next to Towns, and I guess fill in the gaps of the starting lineup synergy. I think you still take Cade there, and I'd still take Mobley second. I think Mobley would have been a really solid number one pick. Unfortunately, I think that Cade is just a generational type of prospect. Mobley protects the rim. He can defend in space. He can. I have faith in his shooting projections, and then he's just got really good touch around the rim. Really good role guy. Really good in the dunker spot. If Cade wasn't there, there'd be no doubting that he would be the absolute favorite for all Timberwolves fans. I think Mobley. He's a match made in heaven for the way I think that he can slot in next to Towns, or potentially, you know, play on the court when Towns is off the court. I think that the conversation for me is if they get the number three pick. I know you're a big Jalen Suggs guy, and I think that most Minnesota-based listeners are big Jalen Suggs guys, and that's not hometown bias, I think. I mean, you watch Jalen Suggs, and it's certainly more than hometown Tyus Jones kind of bias. It's Jalen Suggs is a legitimate, you know, lottery, high lottery pick. But And I think I'd take Jalen Suggs if I was the Timberwolves, just because I think that the level that him and Jalen Green are on are very similar. But if you're asking me for my overall board, you know, best player available, I have Green as my third guy. I just think that superstar potential, which is, you know, a word, a kind of phrase tossed around too much, because the chances of any of these guys becoming superstars are always going to be relatively low just because of how few superstars there are in the league. But Jalen Green for me is the kind of guy who can create his own shot. He can pass off the dribble in a pinch, I guess, and probably, you know, has projections to be a pretty good defender as well if his body fills out and if he kind of grasps NBA defensive schemes. So Jalen Green is my third guy. If you're asking me to be Jason Roses and take the third pick, I think I'm taking Jalen Suggs. How do you feel about that third pick debate?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have seen more people kind of warm on the idea. No, I mean, this isn't just Minnesota specific. This is just in general. Like, I think more people have warmed on Jalen Green as they've had more time to kind of comb through everything that he did in, you know, for the G League Ignite team. You know, his crossover is insane. And just his ability to change directions and change pace so quickly, and then get into a shot from anywhere on the floor out of a flurry of different dribble moves that he's able to do. I think, you know, obviously that's where the league is headed. Like that's something that Suggs doesn't have, at least right now. And you know, I definitely think that, you know, If you have a guy that's got sky high offensive potential, I think it's really hard to kind of pick against that. But I also think that, you know, the Timberwolves are in this interesting spot where, like, they just can't take guys that are going to be projects. Like, they've got to take guys that can come in and be impactful right away in more than one way. And I think that, you know, the Timberwolves lack kind of a guard outside of Anthony Edwards that is really able to put pressure on the rim. You know, I think, you know, for as great as D'Lo is, like, he just is not a factor really at the rim, and neither is Jalen Noel either, because both of those guys kind of prefer to pull up in the mid-range. And so with a guy like Jalen Suggs, who is an insane athlete, I mean, as is Jalen Green, but I think Jalen Suggs is a much more natural downhill attacker. You saw all throughout the NCAA tournament just how physical he is at the, you know, at the guard spot, and how well he's able to finish over and through guys that are much, much bigger than he is. So with that in mind, I think that, you know, the Timberwolves probably would rather have a guy like Suggs. And then you also factor in that, you know, that guy's going to sell tickets because he's from, you know, Minneapolis, St. Paul area. So that's a big separator. And then the last point for me about Suggs is that dude is a legit NBA defender already. Just the way he's able to, you know, just stand guys up. His feet are incredibly fast. He's got really fluid hips. Shout out Tyler Metcalf. You know, he just isn't afraid of anybody. And that mentality is something that, you know, is really going to get Jalen Suggs, you know, onto the floor a ton as a rookie, and especially in clutch time. And it doesn't matter if it's for a team like the Timberwolves or it's for a team like, you know, Golden State, you know, has more of a veteran laden team that needs to win right now. So, yeah, I think, you know, that's kind of the way that I think about it. Like, I think Suggs is a guy that you could throw into the fire right now and would find a lot more success with. But, you know, it's close, but I think I'd agree that Green has higher potential overall. But I also do agree with you, though, that Mobley is number two. I feel pretty solid on Mobley being number two.
Yeah, one and two are pretty set for me. I think the way I kind of think about it, and maybe this is through a strange lens, is that if both of those guys, Jalen Green and Jalen Suggs, were free agents right now, they obviously at the exact same position that they're in, you know, development-wise right now, if they were both free agents, I don't think that Minnesota would even chase Jalen Green, because it just doesn't seem to be the kind of mold that they need on the team. Like you said, like they need shot creators. Every team needs shot creators. You look at the playoffs right now, and the only teams that win games are teams with high level, you know, high usage shot creators. But Jalen Suggs can do that. not as well as Green, I don't think, but he can do it. He's a great defender for his age, which is something the Timberwolves desperately need, especially at those guard spots. He's strong. Like, he's very ready-made NBA kind of guy. And at this point, like, it's a great point that you made, that the Timberwolves aren't... They're not the Houston Rockets. They're not the Orlando Magic. They're not the Detroit Pistons. Like, they're not entering the first year of a rebuild. They're 2, 3, 4 years into it with 2, 3, 4 pieces already of the puzzle. And they need that last guy to kind of slot in and make this a winning team rather than the first building block of a rebuild. And if you have the choice of those two guys, Suggs is the one who's definitely more scalable to any system. You know, I can't think of a system in the league that Suggs wouldn't just walk into and become, you know, a rotation guy pretty much immediately. And Minnesota need those fourth, fifth guys who they don't need to score 25 points a game to be effective. And as much as we love Anthony Edwards, and I see projections that go far past just, you know, a scoring star, that's what he is right now. And that's what he had proven to be, especially in that run during the end of the season, even though he can facilitate and he can, you know, do other things offensively. But they need, like, Jalen Suggs is a glue guy already. Like, he's the kind of smaller version of Jaden McDaniels, if you will. It's that, you know, he's got that dog in him. He's going to fight and scrap on every possession. He's clearly used to winning. It's very rare that Gonzaga even recruit guys who are for sure one and done prospects. They like to kind of build up from the ground up and get guys into their senior year, and then you see them really contributing. You like Corey Kispert, and I know Drew Timmy is coming back next year, but guys like that who can build throughout their college career and then really help impact winning at a high level in their third or fourth year at college. Jalen Suggs was always going to be a one and done. For Gonzaga to even consider recruiting him and playing him heavy minutes over guys who might be there next year and who might be quote unquote more loyal to the college, that just shows how much they believe in him, or how much they believed in him as a genuine winner. And he proved that in his first year. Obviously, he hit that huge shot in the tournament. They lost the championship game, but it's a testament to Suggs how much he impacts winning, the fact that he was even put in that situation and allowed to thrive as a pretty high usage, you know, like first, second, third option on depending nights with a college and like that. It's I just think he's a winning player. I think that he's the kind of guy that every team needs, and I think he can be that from day one. So to me, Suggs is the pick for Minnesota. If I was Houston or if I was Detroit, I'd probably pick Green at 3. But for Minnesota, I would love Jalen Suggs. And with the hometown ties, it's almost a no-brainer.
For sure. I'm with you on pretty much everything you said. I think, you know, having winners in the building is an important thing. Like, I think guys that have that dog in them, that mentality of, you know, you can't fail when I'm with you type of guys. You know, is a huge plus. I mean, having guys with mentalities like Jalen Suggs and Anthony Edwards, to go along with a superstar like Karl Anthony Towns that wants to empower everybody around him as best he can, you know, that's something that really has the makings of an outstanding core of your team. And, you know, and you have a team that can play in just about every single style. You can have teams that can hit you in the mouth defensively if you play like Suggs and Edwards and Okogie and McDaniels and Towns. Like, that's a tough-ass defensive group of five that you can throw out there. I mean, and if Bolmero comes out too, I mean, then you have just another, you know, guy that's just going to get in your face and just piss you off and make you want to, like, feel like you never stepped on the floor. You know, just
I want to talk about Bolmero.
Oh, we'll talk about Bolmero. Don't you worry. We'll talk about Bolmero. But yeah,
let's wait until later. Let's tease the listeners a little bit. If you're hanging around for Bolmero talk, stay tuned.
Yeah, and I think too, just like, yeah, the mentality combined with everything he brings on the floor as a leader and as somebody who makes his teammates better. you know, just gets me really excited about Jalen Suggs. But I have him as kind of a clear three for me over Jalen Green, because I think there's more question marks with Green. Like, I think his floor is much lower.
Yep.
I think he could be Dion Waiters if he's not careful.
Yeah. I think Suggs' floor is higher and has a really high ceiling, but there's a chance that he's just who he is, which is unfair because we don't know that compared to any other player. But right. I think if I was projecting, which is what, you know, draft mocks and all that stuff is all about, I think that there's more of a chance if we're looking at a guy in 5 years who's averaging 25-5-5 on a really good team. I think Green is more likely to do that. But yep. If one of them is going to be a guy who's out of the league, Green's also more likely to be that. So for Minnesota, I think that you take the quote-unquote safer option, which would be Suggs.
Yep.
Who, you're good with this stuff. How does this figure into the salary cap? Because Minnesota are obviously cap-strapped, have been since the beginning of time. and no matter where I look, I get different projections on how much these guys are meant to be making. I'm going to go with Spotrac, which is normally pretty good for NBA contracts. They have the first pick at $8.3 million next year, the second pick at $7.4 million, and the third pick at $6.7. I don't know if that's right, because I think Anthony Edwards is earning more than that, unless the cap dropped. Anyway, I'm not good with the cap stuff, but they're going to earn at least $6 million, say, even the third pick. What does that do to Minnesota's cap sheet? You're good with this stuff. I'd love to pick your brain on it a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're just kind of looking out for trying to project that future, you know, the Timberwolves, like you said, they're strapped. And essentially, you'd have to clear salary in order to make it work. So just looking at the Timberwolves' base roster for next season, they've committed, to my knowledge, $131 million, which is $18 million over the salary cap and $5 million below the luxury tax. And that is while having, two empty roster spots. And that is this, and that's like, that's if Ed Davis and Jared Vanderbilt don't come back. So, I mean, it's kind of
Ricky
tough.
Ricky Rubio is the one, isn't he?
Yeah, so Ricky Rubio is definitely the guy that has to go. Or, you know, you could trade a package of like Malik Beasley, Wancho, Culver for, you know, another guy to come in that's around Malik's salary or a little bit above, and like a non-guaranteed contract that could make the trade work, but then you could use to, you know, waive to essentially buy yourself a few extra million dollars to sign that, you know, to sign that rookie, or, you know, to sign, you know, restricted free agents to a minimum contract like a Vanderbilt or a Davis, potentially just as like a guy to fill a roster spot. And you also have to think about McLaughlin. Like, McLaughlin's a restricted free agent, again, for the third year in a row, I think, or second year in a row. And he's certainly not going to be a two-way player next year. So pretty much there's two options you can take if you want to sign him. Number one is trading Ricky Rubio, but also you have to think about the fact that in order to make salaries match, you can take in 125% of what you send out. So if, you know, if Rubio is sending out, you know, 17.8, that means the Timberwolves would have to take back, you know, a minimum of $14.2 million in that trade, unless it's like a contract that's non-guaranteed that they could just waive. And the only contract I know out there that is like big enough to actually make a dent like that is Aaron Baines' contract. Aaron Baines' contract, or this might have been at the deadline this past year. You know, I'd have to check. But yeah, I think that, so I'm right. So Baines has a non-guaranteed year for this upcoming year that's like eight or $10 million or something like that. So, I mean, if you're looking for a team to try and take Rubio and the Raptors blow it up, I definitely think that would make the most sense to me personally. But yeah, I mean, it's either the Rubio option or you know, Malik in a package to try and, you know, take back less salary to clear stuff up. But yeah, so you'd probably have to clear at least $10 million would be my guess if you wanted to.
And that's not easy, man.
No, like, and that's assuming that Bolmero's here next year, because Bolmero will sign his rookie deal, which thankfully is much closer to like Jaden McDaniels' rookie deal. But they
also have to pay, don't they, to get him over here? Because do they have to pay his buyout clause out of the cap?
No.
That's
something that is just a Glenn suck it up and pay some Spanish dude $4 million or something like that. I don't know what his buyout clause is. I can look
that up. Maybe Glenn will just go into the lottery tax for one last year before he leaves A-Rod with a steaming hot pile of mess. That's not going to happen, by the way. It's going to be tough, but you feel like they have these contingency plans. They must have these contingency plans already in place, because for me, I'm sure the franchise agrees, I'm sure you agree, that there's no better way to brighten this path forward than to keep the pick. There's no way they're going to bring in a player who has as much potential as Green, Suggs, Mobley, Cade, in free agency or likely even via trade. Like, it just seems unlikely that they can get better now and in the future more than if they keep the pick. So the team must have a contingency plan to be able to fit that guy into the salary cap if they do luck out on draft night. So, but that makes things very interesting. From the time the lottery ball gets chosen, if it's 1, 2, or 3, it's going to be a very, very interesting offseason, because there's going to be a lot of moving pieces in the Timberwolves organization, I think. What do they need to do? So they keep the pick, right? They get one of these three guys. We've discussed why, you know, we want either of these guys for specific reasons. What can they then do? Let's say they trade Rubio. Let's say they make that cap work. That they move Rubio or they move Malik. How do they improve internally or externally via free agency?
Yeah, so I think the way that they have to think about it is, you know, the team right now as it stands is a really guard and undersized wing heavy roster. And, you know, the team's real only two bigs on the team that played were Towns and Nas. And so, you know, you've got to think about a way to get another impact big on the floor another legitimate center on the floor so that, you know, you can really have Nas be more versatile in the way that he's lined up, so that he can play alongside Kat, so that he can, you know, be that sole center for the bench, just to be able to throw different looks at defenses, like a Mason Plumlee type of guy. You know, obviously he's under contract with the Pistons, but like trying to find that type of center that can just steal minutes for you and get more flexible with Nas. And then the other thing they need to do is I think they need to find an upgrade at backup point guard, like some guy that can put pressure on the rim, whether that's like an Ish Smith type or, you know, or a guy that can just come in and shoot. You know, I think that, you know, Rubio doesn't really do either of those things well. And it's unfortunate that, you know, the NBA is not like the NFL or the Major League Baseball, where like you can restructure a guy's contract. And in order for the Timberwolves to do that, they'd essentially have to buy Rubio out and then sign him to a new contract. But that is something that I don't remember the last time that was done. And I can't imagine the Timberwolves would do something like that. I mean, despite how great Ricky's been for Ant. So I think those are really the biggest things for me would be, you know, beefing up inside to give Nas positional flexibility, you know, adding more shooting to the roster and adding a guard that can put pressure on the rim.
One thing that has stood out to me through these playoffs is that Ricky Rubio at $17 million as your backup point guard is just horrible value for what you're getting. Right now, we just finished watching Brooklyn versus Milwaukee. Mike James just came over from Europe. he's on a minimum contract. He's giving them 25 to 30 minutes a night.
And he closed. He was in their closing lineup tonight.
Right, and because he can shoot the ball, and he's not an excellent playmaker. He doesn't get to the rim very well. But he can shoot the ball, and he can do it off the dribble. You see guys like Monte Morris, who obviously has been in the league for a while now, but he was that same kind of guy who was just under the radar. I think all over the league, you have backup point guards who are making minimum deals, who can hang around in good rotations because they can shoot the ball or because they can just effectively keep an offense ticking. Jordan McLaughlin is that type of point guard as well. I think he had a pretty down year, J-Mac, but he's that type of guy. Like, it just, for a backup point guard, you can't be paying them $17 million. And especially if they're Ricky Rubio and they don't really fit what your team concept is to begin with. I just feel like that should be the, like you said, I completely agree with both the things you mentioned that they need. They need another big. The league's trending back towards two bigs. I think the small ball theory has kind of been blown to pieces a lot this playoffs, you know, in the playoffs, and we know that it's a copycat league when two bigs starts to work, or at least it doesn't even have to be two bigs, but just two guys who can defend inside. I don't think you can have guys that can't defend. You can't have Robert Covington as your four anymore.
You are what you can defend in the NBA in the playoffs.
Right. And unless you're Brooklyn, and I know that you and Dane had an awesome conversation. If you're listening to this and you haven't listened to Dane and Jack's conversation on Dane's podcast the other day, I would, don't turn this off and go listen to it, but listen to it after it. but you had a good conversation about Minnesota and Brooklyn and kind of the comparisons there. And unless you are that Brooklyn level of offense, I don't think you can have, you know, a guy like Blake Griffin as your five. And Blake was awesome today, by the way. But it's just, like you said, you are what you can defend. You need to have guys, especially around Karl-Anthony Towns, that can supplement him and that can insulate him. And they don't have that right now. Jared Vanderbilt's a really fun and energetic defender, but he's just not big enough. And that kind of seems to be the template. Like, you have to be bigger than Vanderbilt.
Right. He plays like Claxton, but Claxton is so much bigger than he is.
Right.
And it's the same type of player. It's like that type of player works, but you just have to have the physical tools to be able to be that player. And being an undersized 6'8 is tough.
Exactly. And it doesn't even feel like he's 6'8 on the floor. Like, when you see, you know, and he does a lot of things great. Like you said, he rebounds his position extremely well. He's a very good defender, both point of attack and, you know, as a backside guy, but he's just not tall enough. So they need to find that. And I think that's where they should be putting in their biggest resources, whatever they have of the mid-level exception or the biannual exception, should be going to find a guy who's big enough to play 15, 20 minutes a night at the four or five, alongside Nas and Towns. And I think they should be looking on the cheap for a backup point guard, because I think that if you can just find a skill set, one skill set in a backup point guard, most likely shooting, I think, just someone who can shoot both catch and shoot and off the dribble shots. I think that you can get that cheap. You can get that from overseas. You can get that from the G League. You're not getting it with Ricky Rubio, and you're paying him starters money, probably more than starters money. So I think Rubio, as much as we love him as both a player, a franchise kind of icon, and obviously a person, for this to work, I think he's the first one that needs to be traded. And especially if you keep that pick like we're talking about, like you need to find a way to move Rubio to clear that cap space, and you can replace him fairly easily. So to me, that's number one on the priority list.
Yeah, I think, you know, there are guys that, you know, make a whole lot of sense for Minnesota at center. I think, you know, this is going to sound crazy, but I think Gorgui Dieng will probably get a minimum contract in free agency. And, like, Gorgui is somebody who can, like, shoot corner threes. He can rebound. He can defend the rim. Even if that's, like, a biannual exception, which is a little bit above the minimum, it's, like, twice as much as the minimum. So it's, like, $3-3.5 million. You know, I'd love to bring Gorgui back. Or, you know, the other couple names that stand out to me, I mean, Cody Zeller is still capable of giving you some good minutes.
He was really good this year, Zeller. He was really good.
Yeah. And I would be shocked if they brought him back.
Yeah, I don't think they do, and they have some really good talent coming through. I think that Zeller's pretty expendable over there, and a really good fit with Minnesota, to be honest. Daniel Tice is another one who probably gets full MLE, which maybe the Wolves can't afford. But
I would be surprised by that.
He was on $6 million a year, I think, this year, if I'm not five. And like that's a guy that fits really well with the Timberwolves and really well in that kind of that four or five role that we've spoken about. This I don't know how much Chicago likes him. Maybe they want to bring him back. But yeah, I just think that there's options out there, but they are limited. They're gonna have to get creative and they're gonna have to hope that these guys want to sign with Minnesota, and that's been the biggest hurdle so far in Rosas's kind of tenure, is that he hasn't been able to get mid-level exception guys or under that to really choose Minnesota over these other cities.
Yeah, and like JaVale McGee is another name that's out there. You know, those are kind of the guys that stick out to me. And when you start looking, like you were talking about earlier with the backup point guard market, like part of me wonders if, you know, the Timberwolves don't even try and do that. If they just say, like, if Bolmaro's coming, like, we feel confident in the way that he progressed this last season, because I know I sure as hell do. Like, I think Bolmaro, like, if you had Bolmaro come over for the whole training camp, he's in the rotation from day one, in my opinion. He's that good.
Yeah.
And I would feel totally confident having him as the backup point guard from day one.
I want to take a break because I'm going to rant about Leandro Bolmaro when we get back. Let's start the path to success, I guess, if the Timberwolves lose the pick. We'll start with Bolmaro talk, but we'll get to this after that break.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, we are back. Leandro Bolmaro, I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, I've told you, I through YouTube and an app that is like an Australian kind of sports app, I guess, like an ESPN, it's called KO. It just has all sports on it. They have all of Barcelona's games on there. And then YouTube has a few as well. You're giving me the absolute wide eyes. So I have been binge watching Leandro Bolmaro.
I need you to download those files and send them my way.
I have got pages and pages full of Bolmaro clips saved on my laptop. I'm going to write an article eventually. It's going to be long as hell. And I'm going to get it done, hopefully, after the draft lottery, especially if they don't keep the pick and kind of keep us entertained with that a little bit. But Bolmaro is an NBA rotation player. I'm certain of it, or certain as you can be about a guy who would be coming in, you know, via the draft. He would be a late lottery, maybe just outside the lottery pick this year if he was eligible for the draft this year. He is just an awesome player, man. Like, his improvement from last year. Jack's telling me higher over this Zoom call.
Way higher. I think he's a top 10 pick. I think he's a top 10 pick, like, pretty squarely if he came over. And the reason being is because you have a guy who's 6'8", legitimate 6'8", plays point guard.
And he is a legitimate point guard. I've seen people say that he's more of an off guard. They play him as the point guard. When Nick Calathes, who is their their incumbent starting point guard is on the floor. Bolmaro is rarely on the court with him, and Talathis is a really good European player. He played in Memphis, I think, for a few years. Talathis bounced around the league a little bit in the NBA, but he's a really good European player, a great passer, and a really good floor general. When he's off the floor and he's dealt with injuries a little bit, that's when Bolmaro plays, and he is a legitimate point guard. He does not play as an off guard, primarily. He's a point guard. He dribbles the ball up the floor. He defends at the point of attack. He is a point guard. And like you said, he's big. He's skinny, but he's athletic and kind of, body growth over the last season compared to this season is enormous. You watch last season, he loves to dunk, right? Like, he's one of those dudes who just loves to dunk the ball. Last season, he was rim grazing all the time, or slamming it off the back of the rim. Now he's getting elbow height as he over the rim. Like, he would have gained 10 inches on his vertical. Like, that's probably hyperbole, but like, he has gotten remarkably more athletic than
he was. It's Naz Reid-like.
It really is. He's not shifty in terms of like Kemba Walker, kind of wiggle and shake. I think that's probably, to me, my biggest concern with him as a ball handler is he doesn't create space for himself. But he's fast as hell. Like, he is a straight line, off a straight line drive. If he gets a lane, he can finish it. His shot is still a little funky, but the numbers kind of haven't lied this season.
It looks much more fluid than it did in the past.
It's not a two-shot motion anymore. It's still a funky shot, but it's all one motion funkiness, whereas it used to be that kind of hitch in the middle, and that was played out in the shooting percentages. This year, he's over 40% in both the EuroLeague and the Liga ACB, which is the domestic competition. The EuroLeague is all of the best teams around Europe. That's finished up now. They lost in the final. He played 25 minutes in the last four or five games. Last season, he didn't even play more than 10 minutes a game on... I think he may have played more than 10 minutes a game on two different occasions, and he played 7 total games. This season, played every game, most every game. Played over 25 minutes 8 or 9 times. Really integral part. And then in the domestic competition, he's virtually a 25 minute a night guy, and especially lately, he's coach. They don't give minutes to people at Minnesota this season. If Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels came out, or Anthony Edwards especially, let's say, he's the prize recruit, just like Bolmaro is the prize young guy over in Spain right now. If Anthony Edwards was getting 30 minutes a night or 25 plus, no matter what he did. You saw him at the start of the season. He could not hit a shot. He was shooting lots. He was getting every chance he could to get developmental reps. They don't do that in Spain, man. Like, they don't care how young a dude is. They don't care. They're not developing guys for their next stop in the NBA. Like, they're not in the business of giving Bolmaro minutes so that he can be good for the Timberwolves next season. They're trying to win games, man. Like, they got Pau Gasol at 67 years old. playing over there and playing big minutes. Like, Nikola Mirotic plays on that team too. Talathis is, arguably as talented, maybe even less talented than Bolmaro, but he's always going to get the starting minutes because they value experience and winning. So when I say that Bolmaro is getting 25 minutes a game, that's not to be kind of snuffed at, like, that's big time, man. And like, I'll let you get some Bolmaro thoughts out before I just talk about him for another hour. But like, I'm super excited, and especially if they don't keep the pick, he is that backup point guard option, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Bolmaro that really impresses me is that because of his height, he's able to make every single pass in the book. He's got the touch to throw passes over the top. On the drive, he can make, really impressive, weak side skip passes. He can throw passes, over and around passing, passing lanes that are clogged by, guys trying to take passes away and different angles away. And just the way that he reads the floor, like, he just doesn't give up on a play. Like, if he thinks that there's even going to be the slightest of a window that he's going to be able to throw a pass to, he's going to be able to position himself on the floor to create that window that he can pass to someone through. And with a guy like Kat, or even a guy like Nas, like, being able to do that and make life as easy for them as they possibly can so they can attack their, you know, attack the guy that's guarding them. It's likely a mismatch just based on how, you know, where those guys play in their minutes and who guards them, is a huge plus. And also just being able to have a guy that, and we haven't really talked about his defense much, but like,
That's, I was waiting to do like, that separately.
Yeah. Like you know, in movies, how like pit bulls are portrayed, how like everybody's just afraid of them because they just want to come get up in your face and bark at you and just like bite you and
one,
just like
I've got one sitting right here that's the
opposite. Yeah, and like he's exactly like that. Like he comes and gets in your face and makes you uncomfortable and isn't afraid to get right up into you without, you know, giving you space to work with. And I love that because he's able to use his length and his really, really good footwork, you know, that kind of makes up for his lack of like it really high level agility and athleticism. And, you know, when you have that length and you know exactly how to use it on the defensive end, you just become so much more valuable as a defender. It's kind of like Joe Ingles in a sense. Like, I think if I was going to give an NBA like a player comp, I would probably say Joe Ingles just because of the way that he's able to make every single pass in the book and how comfortable he is in pick and roll, and that he's a really tall playmaker. Obviously, Ingles is a better shooter, but Bolmaro is a better athlete. But specifically defensively, I think the way that they're able to play at the point of attack, despite like not having like super plus athleticism, is very similar. And, you know, and being able
to
have...
You know who reminds me of defensively? And this is not to do... This is a strange comparison because they're nothing alike in terms of body size. But he reminds me of Pat Beverly. Like, because he is a full court hound. He will get beaten sometimes defensively because he overcommits to things. Like, he... You can shade him with a really nice crossover because he is so intent on just taking the ball away from you. And that's like Bev, but when he gets it right, like he's just unshakable. They send him out there as like, I'm obviously, I don't know the inner workings of a Barcelona huddle, but I'm 99% sure that he is sent out there and told to just guard one guy and lock him down. And usually it's the point guard or the best ball handler on the other team. When Calathes gets burnt a lot because he's just a small, you know, slow, older point guard, that's when they bring Bolmaro on, and it's usually on the star player. The last game I watched was against Pereira Henry, who was a guy who Minnesota were linked with, and he plays for Baskonia. He's their best player. He had 7-8 points in the first few minutes. They brought Bolmaro on. I think he finished with 9 for the game. Bolmaro played 28 minutes after that. He's not a great team defender because he just face guards people for entire games. Like, and it's unbelievable how good he is at it. You cannot run a dribble handoff around Bolmaro. Like, if you run a dribble handoff, he somehow slides in between the ball and the the guy coming off the handoff and takes the ball away. Like, his point of attack face guarding defense specifically is unbelievable for someone his age. Like, it's genuinely unbelievable. I don't know if he's going to be allowed to defend like that as much in the NBA, just because they're more kind of rigid in the system where they want you to be a better team defender before the guy who just hounds point of attack for 94 feet. But man, like that's what reminds me of Beverly. Is he's just a pest, man. Like, I would hate to play on Bolmaro. I would hate it.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too that's really nice though is that if the Timberwolves, you know, pick up more of a, you know, aggressive switching style of defense, I think Bolmaro would have a much easier transition because, you know, you'd see it, he'd be in an opportunity to make more of those types of plays.
And he can guard at least 3 positions on the floor.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. Especially if you're coming off the bench. And I just think that he'd be able to fit in so seamlessly with, you know, with really good shot makers like D'Lo and Kat and Jalen Noel. You know, I, mm-hmm. and we see too, like the way that D'Angelo Russell was able to make guys around him so much better because of the timing and the cadence of the way that he played offensively, and the he's just super high degree of difficulty passes that he was able to make. You know, D'Angelo Russell's play made me eat my words about Juancho. Like, that's how good of a playmaker he was. And I think Bolmaro could have a similar impact. And, like, you know, if he could set the table for guys like Noel and Beasley and, God forbid, Juancho, if he's still on the roster, you know, that's a huge, huge plus. I mean, and if you look at, you know, his contract would be ever so slightly more than Jaden McDaniels. And if you think about that, like, having a guy that's making like $2 million a year, roughly, or like averaged out to like 2.5 for the next 4 years. That's
just being
big time.
Rotation piece. Just being a rotation piece is a win on that deal. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't need to be a star, and he has potential to be a very good starting level player in the NBA.
I was going to say too, like, I think that he has the opportunity to be like a superstar role player.
Right.
Tonight I was watching the game and tweeted that Bruce Brown and Blake Griffin were superstar role players tonight. Like, if you know exactly what your role is, you know exactly what you're asked to do, you go out there and you can consistently do it extremely well, that totally raises the floor of a team like the Timberwolves from like an eight seed to like a six seed if you show up and you play consistently for all 82 games.
And you do it on that deal, which allows the team to have more roster flexibility around you and spend money on other guys rather than trying to spend money to find that guy at point guard position. Like,
right.
if you get it for $2.5 million, then you might be able to spend $7, $8, $9 million of the MLE on that power forward position rather than trying to balance out, you know, the $9 million that you have on two different guys.
Yeah. You know, like, I don't think that there's all that many like legitimate MLE guys, but, you know, even worse, it would allow you to just take a swing at somebody that, you know, other guys aren't willing to take a swing at. And you might say, you know, that's like a waste of money considering where Minnesota is. But like, if they end up keeping Ricky Rubio around, which I would say is more than likely, given that
the chances
that you get the pick are low. Like, I'm operating under the assumption that the Timberwolves just are not going to have the pick just because it's the most likely scenario. And if Rubio's...
See, I'm operating under the assumption that they will just because I love to, like, self-sabotage.
Oh, man, that's like what we're doing every time we talk, I feel like. It's just a form of self-sabotage. No, but... So, like... Yeah, I mean, then it allows you to have more of the security to, like, if you need to just get rid of Rubio's contract or split it into two smaller contracts, that, like, you're able to do that. Like, do I think that's going to happen? No, because I think that the Timberwolves value Ricky as a leader so much that they're not just going to trade him unless the player or players that they get coming back are going to actually be useful to them. You know what I mean? Like,
this is assuming that they lose the pick, right?
Correct. Yeah. And Bolmaro comes over. Like, Bolmaro is kind of a safety blanket. You know what? If you trade Rubio, then you end up being fine because, you know, you have this guy that can naturally step in and do pretty much exactly what Rubio has done this last year, but more on the floor with obviously less of the leadership that Rubio brings. But I mean, he's such a fascinating player that, in my opinion, if he can figure his shot out consistently to where he can shoot league average, like 37-38%, it doesn't even have to be like crazy off the dribble, but if he like has space coming off like a pick from Carl or Nas or whomever, and he can just step into a three, that would be so valuable. I mean, and he's also able to play next to D'Lo because, like, well, Mero is very comfortable just, like, catching weak side skip passes and shooting from three or sliding into the corner or moving without the basketball. Like, he does all of those things that you'd think a European basketball player can do really, really well. And you know, we saw Jaden McDaniels do a lot last season of just moving without the ball that would force the defense to collapse or shift or switch, that made life a lot easier specifically for Anthony Edwards. And you know, in the, you know, I obviously haven't watched as much Bulmero as you have, but in the time that I've seen Bulmero, when he doesn't have the ball in his hands, you know, he understands space on the floor. He understands how to collapse a defense and can create open shots for others without the ball in his hands.
I don't think you need to watch that much of him to know that, because he does it so often.
Right.
And like, it's very much the European basketball way, like you said, is that one thing is that they run a lot of sets in Europe. Like they don't have the jaw dropping athleticism to kind of spend half the game in semi transition like the NBA does, where it can just be up and back all game.
You really have good vision.
Yeah, and you need, and the coaching needs to have, you know, they're really good coaches over there. They run, like, Barcelona runs some you know, I love my sets, my offensive sets. Barcelona runs some absolutely fantastic sets, man. And Bulmero, because he's been in that system, really knows how to run a play, even when he's not doing anything, just to get the ball away from him, to go and set a screen, you know, a cross screen in the paint for Mirotić to come up and to get a post up, like, and then he'll come out, jet out to the corner and you know, be there for a skip pass from Mirotić when they inevitably load up on him.
Everything's kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that he does, I think, just instinctively. And it's sometimes the kind of thing that Minnesota don't do enough of, because they just haven't, under Saunders, that stuff wasn't happening. It's been more prevalent under Finch, especially with the horn sets and stuff that he runs. Bulmero is going to thrive in any kind of play call. I think Rubio is like that too, where Rubio, my favorite part about him is that when you run a play, he can execute it perfectly. If you know, if he's the guy who's passing to the guy who's shooting, he's going to do it really well. Bulmero is the, you know, from the same kind of lineage there of European guys who just know how to run a play.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to the conversation that I was having earlier of like, it sucks that the Wolves can't restructure Rubio's contract. Because if Rubio was a free agent this year, it'd be perfect, because I'd assume that Rubio would want to come back. And obviously it's different because Ryan's not here anymore. But like, if you got him to come back on like a 3-year, like $14 or $15 million deal or something like that, just essentially to be a leader and to be a guy that can like come in and be confident and give you 10 good minutes a game if you need him, or to just like be out of the rotation and he'd be fine with it, you know, would be...
I don't think he would be, though. That's the thing, is I think that Ricky really...
No, I'm saying like based on like the matchup of the game. We're like,
yeah.
If a matchup calls for him not playing as much, like, he'd be okay with that, I think.
And I don't think he ever takes his animosity towards, you know, the team success or towards, you know, how much he's playing or not playing. I don't think he ever carries that over into the locker room, which is probably, you know, one of the best things about Ricky, is that, like, this year, I don't think he was happy with the team. I don't think he was happy with, you know, the way he was playing himself, and probably sometimes even the role he was playing when he was a bench guy. But he still, you know, became a key figure in Anthony Edwards' development and was still clearly a pretty good locker room guy. And I think that's fairly rare in a league full of, you know, a lot of prima donna type of guys who take out their frustrations on the entire locker room. Jimmy Butler. So, you know, it's like, that's the type of thing that Rubio brings, but it's tough for me to see him. Do you think that Rubio could sign a deal in Minnesota? If they keep him for next season, do you think there's a chance he signs a deal, his next deal, to stay in Minnesota?
Yes. I think if he stays all the way through next year, I would be shocked if he didn't sign another deal. Yeah, because I'd assume that would mean that, like, the only reason they wouldn't trade him is because he said, hey, don't trade me. Like, I want to stay, you know? Like, I think he's earned like a spot on the team, in a sense, solely because of what we've seen from Anthony Edwards and how much Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns credit each of their individual development to Ricky Rubio. Like, I think that, you know, like, if that's $17 million you're going to trade isn't going to net you like an impactful player, somebody that's like more impactful than Rubio that you actually want to keep around long term, Like, does it really make sense to move off that expiring money? Like, yeah, you could say yes, like, it's an expiring chip, that it's an expiring, like, $17 million chip to add in a trade for a third star, but, like, Timberwolves already have that third star. Like,
and they have to be good. The player Tony Brown has to be good enough to warrant being here longer than one season, because if he's not, you may as well just let Rubio expire and either sign him again or just let him walk.
And what we've seen from Rosas is, like, if Rosas doesn't have, like, a definite answer to how he's going to be able to spend the money, he's not going to do it. He's not going to just throw money at something and just say...
And that's the right way to do it.
Correct. 100%. I completely agree with that. Like, you know, I think it's been really smart the way that they, you know, like, didn't necessarily, you know, feel like they had to force getting a guy last at the end of last summer just because they had the money to spend it. Like, then they could have been in the luxury tax. Then they would have been forced to make some type of trade at the end of this season. I mean, you can fault them for not getting another two-way guy after they released Ashton Hagans. Like, that's fair. Not at a certain point, like, under, like, if he knew that he was going to stand pat at the deadline, why wouldn't have you picked up a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson with the empty roster spot? Just to, like, be able to throw different looks out there if you're trying to win games at the end of the season as, like, an extended tryout. Because at that point, then, you know you're not going to go over the luxury tax. So it's kind of just like, you know, sure, it's like a drop in the bucket for Glenn, but it's also an opportunity for you got to have kind of like a free tryout where, like, you can kind of get familiar with the team, the coaching staff, some of the terminology, so that if you need a place to work out and you want to come back the next year, like, you're able to do that. You know what I mean? So
rather than trying to integrate a guy during training camp on a training camp deal and then, you know, only getting to see them in two or three preseason games and a couple of kind of, you know, and we still, I'm guessing that training camp and preseason will be more towards normal this season, but, you know, nothing's guaranteed. We're back in lockdown here in Australia, so nothing's guaranteed with this virus. Yeah. So,
yeah. No, I mean,
I was just going to add one last thing. Finish your point.
So I was going to say, like, if you want to be mad at Rosas for not, you know, doing those really small things that are, you know, super deep on the margins, like, that's totally fine. But I also think that you have to applaud him for not just, like, feeling forced to throw money at something if he doesn't feel confident in it. And I think that's a mark that you see of first-time GMs, is, like, they constantly feel like they need to make a needle-moving move. And if Rosas kind of sees that the risk outweighs the reward, or just, like, there isn't enough solid evidence there that, you know, your investment's going to work out, he's not going to do it. And I applaud and appreciate the fact that you have someone like that in a place that, you know, you're not going to get, you know, impactful free agents to want to come to organically.
Yeah, I think that's how you end up with more one-show contracts, is if you just give people the money because you feel like you need to. One guy I want to talk about who kind of, I don't know where he fits in this puzzle, if he fits in this puzzle, is Jarrett Culver. He's the forgotten guy in all of this, and, you know, for good reason, because I want to forget the minutes that he plays when I watch him. But, like, Jarrett Culver, I guess the question I want to ask is, do you think, so they don't, like, you know, everything, nothing crazy happens in this offseason, right? They don't trade for John Collins, they don't do anything kind of out of the ordinary, rather than just almost run it back and add Bulmaro or do a few things around the margins. Is Jarrett Culver in the rotation game one?
Next year?
Yeah.
Hell no. Hell no. No, absolutely not, dude. Are you kidding me? No.
I think they definitely try and move off him, but do you think if they can't move off him, then Rosas isn't instructing Finch to at least give him prove it minutes like he did, you know, in his first little stint with the team?
No, absolutely not. I mean, part of the reason why Culver played too is because Noel got hurt.
Yeah.
And they were trying to see, like,
Culver's also more of a three. Like, we speak about, I'm not advocating for Culver here. I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like,
you know, you can't have, you know, I guess with Bulmaro's there maybe, but you can't have, like, McLaughlin, Beasley, Noel as your, you know, three, your 1, 2, and 3 off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's been most frustrating about Culver is, like, Culver's defense has not been consistent. Like,
his that was meant to be the thing that was good.
Yeah, and, like, I think Culver would still get minutes if, like, his defense, like, the defense we saw in the preseason against, like, legitimate NBA players, and in the first few games of the season, like, if that defense was consistent, he would be playing minutes, because that is really valuable to have if you have a stable of guys like, you know, Culver, Okogie, Vanderbilt, and McDaniels that can all, you know, switch on pick and rolls and just be really long and in your face at the point of attack, especially if they want to be more aggressive switching next year. Like, who knows? Maybe Culver has an amazing offseason and figures his shit out. I would be floored if that happens. But, you know, if they have him around next year and they aren't able to trade him, like, I think it makes the most sense for them to send him to the G League and say, go, like, get your confidence back, go play basketball where you can find success and you know what it's like to be successful on a basketball floor, decline his fifth year option or fourth year option or whatever it is. And then, because in December of last year, they exercised his option for next year, so they have him under contract for next year. So, like, but they didn't do the what they did for Okogie, where they did both at once. So, I mean, then next year, like, if he's still on the roster, you can have that as, like, trade salary, but have him in the G League just, like, finding his rhythm and trying to get back. And then, you know, if he plays well in the G League and feels more comfortable, then you can re-sign him to a smaller contract after that that's more team-friendly, you know? Like, I see that as being something that could happen, but, like, I don't know. I just think that with the way Culver has played at the NBA level and how inconsistent it's been, I just think the best thing for him is to be able to let him go and play, whether that's with another team or in the G League. Like he's certainly got NBA strong role player potential if he's able to play at the peak of his game consistently, like we've seen flashes of, especially defensively. But I think that's really the only path for him to stick in Minnesota long term.
He can't lose any value.
No,
going into if you cannot get off him this summer, and then he goes to the G League and he just tanks it, like he averages 10 points a game on 40% shooting. Like, his value is still not any lower than it is right now. Because if you can't trade him now, 2 years removed from being a lottery pick, a high lottery pick, like, his value is rock bottom. If he goes to the G League and you know, it's more of the terrible Jarrett Culver that we've seen, like, that doesn't really tank his value at all. Like, it's kind of a win-win situation. Like, if he goes there and averages 20 points a game and he shows really good defensive instincts, like, teams around the league pick up on that. Like, it might not hold the same weight that doing that in the NBA does, obviously. But
it's better than, like, just getting DNPs or, like, coming in for 2 minutes and playing like crap. And then, because, like, I think for Culver, like, the way they were using him the last, like, month and change before they, like, had him go get, you know, surgery, for someone that's, like, who he is as a person and just, like, that he's shy and he kind of lacks confidence a little bit. Like, I just think it's tough to expect a guy to succeed like that. And, you know, I think it's funny. Like, we were talking about this in January of last year or January of last season, saying, like, are we sure sending Culver to the G League is not a bad idea? And everybody was like, what the hell? Whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what are we doing? Like, guys, stop. Like, this is ridiculous. Use the number 6 pick. Like, and now I feel the same way about it as I did then. Like, it's the best option. And, like, it's, you can't think that, like, all right, I got to play this guy because of his contract. Like, his contract is a sunk cost, and you have to do what's best for the player to be able to develop, to give you the most bang for that investment. And
yeah, being the 6th overall pick doesn't matter anymore,
although hopefully now that he's healthy, like he'll be healthy this summer and have a full summer to, like, you know, improve, hopefully. You know, that'll help him because he did play really strongly at the start of the season last year. So, you know, who knows? I mean, I personally think Jared Culver is going to get traded this summer. But if he's back next year, I mean, he's really got to have like a strong, strong, strong training camp guarding Anthony Edwards.
Yeah. What are
and
they
Malik Beasley
him?
if he wants to like be in the rotation.
What would they get for him to, you know, in a deal? Oh, that they
I mean, I don't.
Or
I think
do,
it would
do
be.
Do they have to attach something to him?
I think it would be like if they traded Beasley and Culver, or like Beasley and Wancho, or something like that, or like Culver for so and so in a second round pick, like a late second round pick that they could get back into the the draft this year. I mean, and it could just be like a terrible team that has like a later second round pick, like Houston this year has picks at 23 and 24 in the second round. Like I could see Houston offering like some type of, I don't know. I mean, what does Houston have on their roster that's just like a small salary filler that they could offer?
All of them. All
like,
of them.
Yeah, I mean, they just have, like, a bunch of dudes on their team that's, like, small salary-filling guys that, like,
and that's
you
a guy,
trade
and that's
with
a
pick to, like, just bet on Culver, like, put him in your own G League team to try and develop him yourself. Like, if they traded...
And they've done that with Porter Jr. Like, not to... Porter was always kind of playing better than Culver, but, you know, like, they seem to be willing to take on the risk of guys who could potentially be good players and who haven't kind of hit so far. And as a good way for Minnesota, like that would be a good team to try and deal with. Culver goes back to Texas, which is, I think, big for him. And Minnesota can potentially clear, you know, $3 million worth of cap space if they get a cheaper guy. And that, like we've already discussed, clearing any cap space in this offseason is, you know, priority one, pretty much, whether it's Beasley, Rubio, Culver, someone needs to go and they need to bring back less.
I mean, who knows? Maybe they trade like Culver and, you know, a future like good second round pick. Because the Timberwolves have two second round picks in 2022, I think. But they could also trade like Daniel. They could also try and get Daniel House. I don't know. Just like a place where Culver can go and just play without a bunch of repercussions. It would be great. And I don't know. I feel like Houston just makes sense based on where they are in the draft. And that would give like the Wolves reset, but I don't know. I who knows? I feel like it's just impossible to gauge what Culver's value is, you know?
Yeah. Like it really is. Like he's the most confusing piece of this puzzle to me because they clearly invested in him. And I think that, in an ideal world, obviously he's a guy who can play minutes, but they're also at the crossroads where they can't keep giving minutes to dudes because they were a high draft pick or because they owe them money. Like they need to just give minutes to dudes who help them win.
Yep.
And Culver, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think Culver was a minus 10, you know, I think they were 10 points worse per 100 possessions when Culver was on the floor last year. Like that's where he's at. Like that doesn't seem strange because when you watch the game, anytime Culver was in, the team just tanked. And you know, that's unfortunate, but that's the reality. And I think it's best for all parties to move off that and start afresh.
Yeah. I mean, that just makes the most sense to me to, I don't know, just give him the best chance to be successful in his career, but also, you know, for the Timberwolves to make sure that they don't just have like this $7 million up against them. Like, I mean, you think about two guys that like aren't really big difference makers for them. Three, really. I mean, in Wancho, Rubio, and Culver that are making, you know, like $29 million.
A third
that's just the reality of the situation. And like, You know, thankfully, after this upcoming season, they'll be able to get rid of all three of those. But, I mean, I think you're going to see an in-season trade from the Wolves next year just to try and shuffle that money around. Because, obviously, like, if you take that, you know, $29 million away, you're only going to get, like, $10 million in cap space. Because, you know, it's not like you can use back all that $29 million of just signing new free agents. But, yeah, man, it's tough. And with Culver, I just think that you've got to try and trade him, and then if not, it's G League, I think, unless he just completely wows you. But I think he's a guy that you'll see that'll be in Minnesota all summer, that like they'll want to work with him as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Last question before I let you go. I want to know, like, I think you watch the playoffs right now. There's a lot of teams who are really intriguing, and there's a few teams I think that kind of embrace the mantra that Minnesota seems to be embracing of kind of all offense and no defense or mediocre defense at best. Clearly Portland's one of them. They've been eliminated. They were 29th in defense. They also have Damian Lillard, who even though we love Karl Anthony Towns, is a tier above Cat comfortably. The two that intrigue me are Atlanta, who were 18th in defensive rating, and Dallas, who are 21st in defensive rating. To me, the reason I've been really watching those teams because I wanted to see what they do defensively that makes them so much better than Minnesota, but still not very good defensively, if that makes sense. They don't have good defenders. I think that they all have individual good defenders on their team. DeAndre Hunter and Clint Capella stand out for Atlanta. I don't even know. Dorian Finney-Smith is a good defender. Dallas don't have many good defenders, man. I don't even know how they finished 21st. But what they do is they just execute defensive principles properly all the time. And I know that that's easier said than done sitting behind a computer like we are. But I just don't... I think that Minnesota can be a good defensive team with the roster they have, plus, you know, marginal additions.
Well, what do you mean by good? Let's define that first. Like, good, in that range.
Good for them. Yeah, so like good in for that, them. So it's
or low 20s? Low 20s?
Yeah, 15 to... For, like, yeah. Late in the bottom half of the league, but in the top half of the bottom half, if that makes sense. And what they do is they just need to do the right things. I mean... Help the Helper is I'm going to get a little bit technical here because this is just something that I notice at all playoffs, every possession, every drive. So they have guys like Luka, Trae Young, Tim Hardaway Jr., Jalen Brunson. These guys get beat off the dribble, right? That just happens, especially when they're facing really high-level ball handlers. But when they get beat off the dribble, Capella or even Porzingis, who's been horrible in the playoffs defensively, but, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein... Those guys rotate up. The guy who's in the corner rotates, sinks in. And when you sink, it's obviously you sink in from the corner and you block the guy who's in the dunker spot, right? Like that, you get in front of them, you just put a body on them, and then the guy who's in between that will fill, which means he'll kind of take two defenders. He'll then defend the guy in the corner and the guy in the slot above the arc. And those two teams do that very well all the time. And they will still get beaten defensively a lot because they just don't have great individual defenders on the court and they have guys who can really pick on. But they help the Helper all the time.
Yep. And X-ing out. They X out really well too.
And that's just the things that I just noticed with Minnesota that I just didn't do. There were so many times where that first Helper would come and step up and no one would be there on the backside to sink in and fill the dunker spot, which is an easy dump-off pass or a putback. And then they do sink and no one will fill and they'll leave a guy in the corner wide open or a guy in the slot wide open. D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards are the biggest kind of exponents of this, I guess. Like, they're the two guys who don't do that often enough. And to me, I know that you know, you watch any kind of... You watch those track the pack kind of things. You see that Chris Finch is so dedicated to kind of drumming into their heads that defense is what matters to win games. And I think they can win more games if they just do those simple things right. And I think that's what I'm going to be looking at coming straight out of the break after a full preseason and a full training camp, is if these guys are more committed to to doing the basic things. I don't ever expect D'Angelo Russell to become 20% more athletic or to, you know, like, be a guy who can stay in front of guys. I just expect guys to do the basic things more often, and I think this team can actually be a playoff team.
Yeah, and a lot of it is off the ball, too, and it's just, like, paying attention and communicating. And, like, you hear D'Lo constantly saying on the broadcast, no fouls, no fouls, no fouls. And so it's like he's definitely locked into that part on defense, and I definitely think he was much better on defense, especially off the ball once he got back. And I think that was just because I think the team's overall communication level was a lot better under Chris Finch. And, you know, when you're talking about stuff that's all off the ball, like help the helper, communicating, Xing out, tagging rollers, and then communicating switches after that, all of that stuff is controllable. Like, it does not matter your size or your athleticism. Like, sure, you might be in a position where, like, if you tag a roller, you might have to get switched onto him for a time, or it might end up in a scramble and you might be on the weak side, you know, matched up on a dude that can take you into the post. Like, sure, that happens, but then you have to make another adjustment. Like, defense is all about making adjustments on the fly and helping as best you can. And
right. Just because you're probably going to lose that matchup when you get switched, that doesn't mean that you lazily go through the action of switching. Like, if you get there, you at least give yourself, you know, a 20% chance to win that possession rather than a 10% chance. And that's huge if you do that every play.
Yeah, and something that I personally saw from D'Angelo Russell that I thought was good, when that would happen to him, he'd get switched onto him, he would get up in a guy's grill.
And he really likes that stuff. I think he really likes... And he getting switched up on.
Yeah, and he would poke at the ball.
Mm.
And that's something that can buy you an extra 2 or 3 seconds making a guy uncomfortable, because then, you know, if he's got his back to you and you're poking at the ball, maybe he turns and faces. You know, that's a second, second and a half. And then he's going to process. Like, no one's going to turn and face and go right away if you're poking at the ball like that. So, you know, it's little things like that I think can make the Timberwolves marginally better if they can do that consistently. But like you're saying, I mean, it's all consistency with this stuff. And if you've got a coach that's constantly going to be on you about these types of things, and is going to have a whole entire summer to install stuff and communicate with guys and say, this is what I need from you specifically. You know, I certainly think the Timberwolves next year have the potential to be a better defensive team than they were this season. Just because if you look at where the Timberwolves ranked this season on defense, I think they were like 28th defensively or 29th. You know, I could be wrong with that, but
they definitely were post Chris Finch. Post Finch, they were worse than what they were with Saunders.
They were worse with Chris Finch?
Yeah, quite comfortably as well. I think just in comparison to the lead, I think some of the lead was kind of got better as the season went on and Minnesota didn't. So that kind of bumped them down in the total rankings. But I think they finished the season around between 25 and 30. Like, from that, after 25, you know, you're just bad on defense. It doesn't really matter if you're 25th
yeah,
or you're 27th.
They were 27th on defense, according to Cleaning the Glass. And
I think they can be high, low 20s. Like, and that is all, if they can be a top 10 offense, which they were hovering around, you know, in those last 22 games with D'Lo, I think that you can be a good team. Like, you can win games like that, but you need to be able to at least compete defensively. You can't be getting blown off the floor every game defensively like they, you know, were towards the end of the season. Because even when, like, they were much better towards the end of the season, but they still had a losing record, you know, in those last 22 games. Like, it's just hard to have a winning record if you're one of the worst offensive teams in the league.
Yeah, so they were 27th under both Saunders and...
Oh, all right. Well, I got that wrong.
I think. I'm just going to double-check this. So they were 27th there, and... No, they're 25th under Saunders. 25th. So they went from 25th to 27th. It was a difference of about 2.5 points per 100 possessions. So not like a huge drastic improvement, but like you were saying, team defenses as a whole got worse because that was after the trade deadline when some of these other teams started to get way better and you had more outlier performances. But yeah, I mean, part of it too is I think that like when you had Ed Davis in there, and you had like Ed Davis and Vando, and those guys were playing a bunch, and Culver was playing a lot, like guys like that, I think you're naturally going to play slower pace and probably going to get a few more stops, but your offense is going to be so bad that like you won't really realize that your defense is all that much better, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I definitely think though that under Finch, like next season, they're going to be much more aggressive and be willing to change up the way that they play defense. Whereas this year, I think it was a lot more rigid. And that's something that I'm personally excited for, because I think if you get Cat more, you know, out on the floor and defending in space, I think that's just going to be much better for him personally. And, and then if you have a guy like McDaniels has shown that he can clean up on the backside. If he's the one that plays the four, or if it's John Collins, Collins is an excellent backside defender. And you saw Atlanta do that a ton.
Evan Mobley is a guy who would fit that role as well, really well.
Yeah, like they had Capella hard hedging and Capella like showing because they trusted Collins on the backside a whole lot. And that was a huge part of his role. Like a lot of people said, like, oh, Collins didn't really do anything on offense, so he's pretty expendable. But like Collins being able to defend the rim allowed DeAndre Hunter at 6'8 or 6'9 to like really be out there in guys' grills as a three, clamping people up. And that's something that's going to be big for Atlanta.
That's my overall point, is you don't have to be the best team in the league defensively, you know, to compete and to win games and to play playoffs if you can be average enough defensively. Like, if you're good enough offensively, you don't have to be... You can be average defensively if you're good enough offensively. That took me a while to get out, but that's what I'm getting at. It's Atlanta were ninth in the league offensively. Dallas were eighth. Like, that's not elite. That's kind of the range that I expect Minnesota to be. But they were, you know, 18th and 21st defensively, respectively. And that's where Minnesota need to get to, because they have the offense that can do that. Like, they have the offense that can be a top 10 offense pretty comfortably, especially if they add some pieces like we've spoke about throughout the podcast. Like, that's all about the defense. It's always going to be about, you know, just the ceiling that they have for defensively isn't very high, but they still need to hit that, you know, low ceiling for this to work.
Yeah, and the thing too is, like, I think about the Nets, like, the Nets, like, a lot of times have awful mismatches on defense, but because of the way that they communicate and rotate, like, they're able to steal possessions. And Minnesota's just got to find more ways to steal possessions, and, like, just playing a rigid defense where you're not changing it and not, you know, being willing to junk it up with the way that you, you know, double guys, switch up who's guarding who for a possession just to throw people a different look. Like, I think Finch was much more willing to do that. And, the more that you get comfortable being able to play multiple on defense, the more you'll be able to steal possessions. And, like, that could be the difference between, you know, being 27th defensively to being 24th or 23rd over the course of a season, kind of like what you saw with Dallas and Atlanta. And the thing about both of those teams is they can throw a lot of different looks at you just because of the way that the roster's, you know, constructed with a lot of depth, especially on the wing. They have bigger and more physical, longer wings that kind of allows you to do more. Whereas the Timberwolves are a little hamstrung with, like, you know, Malik Beasley is 6'3 and isn't really giving you a whole lot defensively. Like, you know, same thing with Noel or, you know, even Okogie at times too. Like, Okogie plays way bigger than he is, but sometimes, like, people can just shoot right over him because he's only 6'4.
Yeah.
So it's things like that without having those bigger, more physical wings. I think you just have less options defensively.
Yeah. That's the most intriguing thing, I think, you know, for this team construction, is what they do to bring in defensive help. To me, I think the main cog in defensive improvement is still Anthony Edwards, because I think we know that D'Angelo Russell is going to be below average at best and horrible at worst defensively. We've seen that Cat has improved and can potentially improve a little bit more, or at least if he stays at the level that he did last season or this season. You know, you can win games with a defense, with a center that defends like that. Anthony Edwards is the one that he's still kind of on the fence. Like, he was a very bad defender this season, but he's also in his first season. He's shown, at least offensively, that he is a very quick learner. And I think defensively as well. I think he definitely got better defensively throughout the year. He just started with such a low bar that he was never going to get to average. But if Anthony Edwards comes out with a better understanding of the system, with a better mindset towards doing all those things that we spoke about consistently, helping the helper, Xing out, and kind of commits himself to doing that, especially since his offensive role is never going to, shouldn't probably be as high as it was this season for the whole season, just because there's going to be more guys taking shots around him. If he can take less breathers defensively and kind of lock in, he's the guy who can turn the tide, because if you have McDaniels, Cat now, and Edwards, who are all playing at least average defensively, I think that you can compete. But two weak links in Russell and Edwards, like two really, really weak links in the chain, that's hard to overcome no matter what the other guys do. And
yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. And the last thing that I'll add on to that is that I think it was very evident that both of those guys had much fewer defensive lapses off the ball as the season went on. I think for Ant, it was just a matter of like, okay, holy shit, the pace of the game is much faster.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the things that I have to look out for. Whereas with D'Lo, I think it was just understanding that he has to communicate better. And like, he's got to be the guy when he's out there to like really call stuff out. And he's got insane awareness and vision offensively. And it's like hard for me to understand why that can't, you know,
translate to the other end.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the hope, that both of those guys can kind of continue to make strides on off the ball on the defensive side. And if they do that, then, you know, I think you could see a team that's closer to, you know, 23rd or 24th than they are to the last team in the league defensively.
Right. All right. Well, I've taken up plenty of your time. Thank you, as usual. You can catch Jack over at Tainus Hoopus, doing a lot of good work. I'm sure we'll ramp some stuff up as we get into the draft lottery and kind of draft season in general. Anything that you want to plug, Jack, before I let you go?
Yeah. So I'm actually doing more Lynx coverage this year, which has been a lot of fun. I was in the building for the Lynx win over the Dream on Friday night, which is a great game. You know, it's unfortunate that not a lot of the Lynx games are made available on Bally Sports North like they are for the Timberwolves. But, you know, if you Google how to find the games, they're there and you can watch them. I'd really recommend it. They're a lot of fun to watch. They've got a really good team this year, despite the record, because, you know, their best two players missed the first couple of games with, you know, being overseas and fulfilling their overseas contracts before coming back for the WNBA season. So I'll be doing more WNBA coverage. And then the other thing I'm going to be doing, hopefully starting this upcoming week, is getting into player reviews. So kind of looking at, you know, player season, some of their best plays, some of their worst plays, you know, what skills they could add that would best move the needle for them. You know, grades, things of that nature will kind of be in the format, and you'll see it once I put it out. I have an idea in my head of kind of how I want that to go. And so my hope is to be able to do that for every single player on the roster, you know, over the course of the next month or so. So that's what I've got cooking.
They will be very good as well, those player reviews. And that's the true mark of an off season when we start writing player reviews, especially an off season in Minnesota, which does not include playoffs ever. So thank you, Jack. That was a bit depressed, wasn't it? Thank you, Bob, for coming on. You're a legend, man. And I look forward to kind of getting back and doing this in a few weeks for sure.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We'll keep counting those clocks down until that day of just self-sabotage repeats itself on draft lottery night. So, but I appreciate you having me. Always good to be with you.
No worries, man. Everyone else, thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next time.